Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is, episode 242, I think 242, and the date is 15 March. Another short episode, not too many stories. We'll get started right away with CENTCOM X, 14 March Red Sea update between 6:50 a.m. on March 14 and 12:40 a.m. on March 15. Reining back Houthi terrorists fired two anti-ship ballistic missiles from Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen toward Gulf of Aden and two additional anti-ship ballistic missiles toward the Red Sea. There were no injuries or damage reported by U.S. or coalition ships. Additionally, U.S. CENTCOM successfully engaged and destroyed nine anti-ship missiles and two unmanned aerial vehicles in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. So that's 14 March into 15 March. And then today, 15 March, Red Sea update, between approximately 8:30 and 10:50 p.m. local time on 15 March, Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists fired three anti-ship ballistic missiles from Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen toward the Red Sea. There were no injuries or damage reported by U.S. coalition or commercial ships. So it continues on day after day in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. Next, we'll do a, kind of an update on negotiations, Rafah, that sort of thing. 15 March, Times of Israel. Prime Minister says he okayed plans for Rafah operation. Hamas demands still absurd, but talks go on. Prime Minister Netanyahu says Israeli delegation will travel to Qatar for ongoing negotiations after cabinet discusses latest proposals by terror group for hostage release. This is from Times of Israel staff, 15 March. While calling for Hamas's latest demands for a hostage release deal absurd, Prime Minister Netanyahu said on Friday, today, that Israel will send a delegation to Qatar, to continue talks on a potential truce once the security cabinet discusses the Israeli position. At the same time, Prime Minister's office said he approved military operational plan for the offensive in southern Gaza city of Rafah. Israel has said Rafah, where four Hamas battalions are deployed, remains Hamas's last major stronghold in the strip. The IDF has said an offensive, or Israel has said an offensive, is necessary to achieve the war's goals, and it is not a question of if, but when. The plan has caused intense consternation, the Rafah plan, in the international community, including from the United States and Egypt, due to Rafah now hosting over 1 million displaced Palestinians from elsewhere in Gaza. Israel has said it is making plans to evacuate and protect civilians as part of its offensive plans. After a war cabinet meeting on Friday, the prime minister rejected the latest proposal put forward by Hamas, saying its demands are still absurd. Quote, Israel and Hamas have struggled to agree on a deal for weeks as both sides accuse each other of sabotaging talks and making unreasonable demands. Israel has continued to maintain it will not agree to any deal that includes a permanent end to the war with Hamas still in power. According to the proposal, which is seen by Reuters, Hamas suggests in the latest proposal that the initial release of Israelis include women, children, the elderly, ill hostages in exchange for the release of between 700 and 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. The release of Israeli female recruits is also included. That's a quote. Hamas proposed a permanent ceasefire and a deadline for an Israeli withdrawal from Gaza would be agreed upon after the first stage. The group said all detainees from both sides will be released in the second stage of the plan. Almost done. Talks appeared to break down late last week as Hamas continued to demand that Israel end the war and withdraw all troops from Gaza, rather than the six-week pause and partial withdrawal that Israel had already agreed upon. Israel has agreed to hold talks based on the Paris proposal, but has stressed that any break in fighting would be temporary, committed to its long-hold goal of not ending the war until it destroys Hamas. Hopes had risen in recent days, though, with a senior Arab diplomat telling Times of Israel this week The talks were advancing after Qatar put heavy pressure on Hamas to soften its demands, warning that leaders residing in Doha could be deported if they did not adapt their approach to negotiations. Late on yesterday, Hamas said it presented to mediators a comprehensive vision of a truce based on stopping what it called Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, providing relief and aid, the return of displaced Gazans to their homes, and withdrawing Israeli forces. A senior Israeli official told the Walla News site that Hamas's demands were still too high, but, quote, there's still something there to work with. Almost done. On Friday, White House National Security Spokesman John, National Security Council Spokesman John Kirby said the Hamas response was within bounds of the deal we've been working on for several months. Kirby said the United States would not be sending a delegation to the next meeting between negotiators in Doha, but that the administration remains engaged on the matter. That's it. This is an interesting one. This is from Al Jazeera. Leaders of Germany, France, Poland to meet men's rifts over the Ukraine war. This has got to do with the French President Macron talking about sending French troops to Ukraine, apparently to relieve Ukraine troops that are doing other duties to go fight. People in Europe are not happy about this. So the leaders of France, Germany, and Poland are meeting in Berlin to resolve differences over how to support Ukraine as Russian voters go to the polls in an election that looks set to extend Vladimir Putin's reign. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz hosted French President Emmanuel Macron and Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk in Berlin on Friday. Today, with the three members of the so-called Weimar Triangle set to hold urgent discussions on how best to support Ukraine, which is short on military resources needed to definitively halt the Russia 2-year invasion of the country. But simmering disagreements between Macron and Scholz threatened to undermine cooperation between the allies. Glaring divisions between French and German leaders were laid bare at a gathering of European leaders last month when French President Macron created controversy by saying sending soldiers to Ukraine could not be ruled out and made pointed comments about allies refraining from being, quote, cowards. That's not going to go over. Sending troops to Ukraine, France. It'll go over like a Led Zeppelin. Scholz responded angrily, saying participants at the conference had agreed there will be no ground troops on Ukraine soil sent by European countries. On Wednesday, he doubled down on this position, telling Parliament that German soldiers participating in the conflict is a limit that I, as Chancellor, do not want to cross. His position applied to the deployment of army personnel in Ukraine and any potential operational planning in Germany. Dialing down tensions ahead of the summit on Friday, Macron softened his earlier comments. Speaking to French broadcasters on Thursday, he signaled the current situation did not warrant the deployment of troops and France would never go on the offensive, even while he rammed home his combative message that Europe should not show weakness and keep all options open lest the war spread. Those three leaders from Poland, France, and Germany meeting on the first day is supposed to send a message to Russia, sending a signal of unity and solidarity. On Friday, however, the Kremlin spoke divisions with its comments that France was already involved in the war and had now signaled it was ready for deeper involvement. I'll stop right there. Drink some water. I don't think we'll see French troops in Ukraine unless they're already there. We just don't know it, right? moving on. We have two UK stories here. First one, Britain finalizes deal to buy 14 Chinook helicopters. Andrew Chutter, 14 March Defense News. Britain's defense secretary has committed to a deal to acquire a new fleet of Boeing-built extended-range Chinook helicopters. Probably a good buy. 14 CH-47ER Chinooks, extended-range, destined principally for the British Special Forces, will be delivered to the Royal Air Force under a term of deal signed between the British and the U.S. government. Defense Secretary Grant Shapps, that dude's always in the news, on Thursday confirmed the procurement, known as the Chinook Capability Sustainment Program. It will advance. The Defense Ministry originally confirmed the deal in May of 21, but talks to complete negotiations were slowed by British concerns about cost growth and other issues. pardon me, at one point during the negotiations last year, then Secretary of Defense Ben Wallace was widely reported in the UK to have threatened to cancel the program due to spiraling costs. Giving evidence to Parliamentary Defense Committee in November, Grant Shapps said he too had raised the idea of axing the procurement with U.S. officials. In a statement on Thursday, Defense Ministry said negotiation with the U.S. government had produced a cost reduction. Here's a quote. The U.K. has reduced costs for elements of the program by more than £300 million, ensuring value for money whilst providing our armed forces with a cutting-edge heavy lift capability, though it did not release the total cost of the program or details about reductions. You want good capability, you're going to pay for it. That's all there is to it. The current delivery schedule has not been made public, although a website operated by the Defense Equipment and Support Arm of the Defense Ministry says first delivery is set for 27, with the manufacturing program end of 29. Excuse me while I cough. The new airframes will replace most of the obsolescent Chinooks in the Royal Air Force fleet that is currently shrinking. CH-47 numbers from 60 to 51. The 14 oldest Chinooks will be retired from the UK fleet as the new machines enter service. This is actually a very good article by Andrew Chutter. No decision has been made on what will happen to the Chinooks once they are pensioned off. I'm going to try to be funny here. I got an idea. Why don't they take all the good parts off of them, sell them, and then dig a hole and bury them? That's the joke. Moving on. The overall size of the British Chinook fleet will remain at 51 aircraft as the new aircraft are delivered and the old aircraft are retired. The extended-range helicopter will have double the range of the standard CH-47 operated by the Royal Air Force and help fill a Special Forces capability gap created by the early retirement of Lockheed Martin Hercules C-130s last year. Very good article. While we're talking about UK, this is from Defense Post, 15 March, from the staff. Kind of the FAFO files. UK says jet-carrying defense minister hit by electronic attack near Russia. Everybody knows that Russians, you know, they use electromagnetic warfare like it's their job. They're very good at it. So a British Royal Air Force jet plane carrying the UK defense minister had its signal jammed as it flew near Russian territory this week, a government spokesman said on Thursday, yesterday. The electronic attack happened on Wednesday evening as Grant Shapps flew back on an RAF jet from Poland, where he had watched a NATO exercise, the Times newspaper reported. A UK government spokesman said the plane temporarily experienced GPS jamming when they flew close to Kaliningrad on the Baltic Sea, some 1,200 km west of Moscow. Quote, it did not threaten the safety of the aircraft, and it is not unusual for aircraft to experience GPS jamming near Kaliningrad, which is, of course, Russian territory, the spokesman added. The Times, which had a journalist on the plane, said the GPS signal was interfered for about 30 minutes. Mobile phones would not work. The internet did not work, and the aircraft was forced to use alternative methods to determine its location. Chaps had earlier watched hundreds of troops taking part in Steadfast Defender exercise, the largest drill staged by U.S. military alliance since the Cold War. The U.K. is one of Ukraine's strongest backers in its two-year fight against Russia, and London has committed more than £7 billion of military support to Ukraine and has trained tens of thousands of Ukrainian troops. I'm going to cough again. Excuse me. And water. Next, two more stories, and then we're done. Both Marine stories, USMC. Both good. This is from National Defense Magazine. Haven't done a story from those guys for a while. I probably should start doing more from them. Budget 2025, Marine Corps proposed budget remains mostly flat. I think we did the Air Force last episode. Episode before that, we did the Army. So now we're doing the Marines, and then we got the Navy next. 11 March, Allison Park, the Department of the Navy's budget request from Marine Corps for 2025 funds the services modernization ambitions and remain similar to the FY24 budget proposal, a top Navy official said. Of course, because the Marine Corps falls under the Department of the Navy, they got to deal with the Navy, I guess. Doesn't look like it raised, mostly flat. Here's a quote from Rear Admiral Ben Reynolds, who's a Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Budget Director. He said this at a budget brief on 11 March. Procurement is mostly flat with investments in the industrial base, undersea capabilities, and Marine Corps force design. The Marine Corps launched force design in 2030. I'm sorry. The Marine Corps launched Force Design 2030 in 2019 to revise the service's force structure, weapon systems, equipment, and training to focus on near-peer threats in the Indo-Pacific. The service has been issuing annual reports and updates based on research and experimentation and changes made under the plan. I think we talked about this before. The service has recently dropped 2030 from the name, so it's not Force Design 2030 anymore. It's just Force Design. The Marine Corps 2025 budget reflects the commitment to investing in force design readiness and modernization, Reynolds said, and here's kind of how they did it. A good breakdown here. So, we'll talk about procurement and RDT&E. Remember, Doug Bush said he'd rather spend money on procurement than RDT&E. I think that's what the Marines are doing. So about $4.2 billion is set aside for Marine weapons and ground procurement, $200 million more than FY24 budget, which has still not been passed. What do they get for $4.2 billion? This includes 674 joint-like tactical vehicles. Have you seen those JLTVs? I don't like them. That's just me. Anyway, moving on. 80 amphibious combat vehicles and guided missiles such as 90 naval strike missiles with anti-ship land attack cruise missile capability, 22 Block V tactical Tomahawk missiles for long-range fires, 123 javelins, that's not very many, and 6 guided multiple launch rocket systems, GMLRS. The procurement budget also funds 53 fixed-wing aircraft, and they're broke down by 13 F-25Bs, 13 F-35Cs, 27 multi-engine training systems, as well as funding for rotary heavy-lift CH-53K King Stallions. In addition to weapons and fleet modernization, the Marine Corps budget focuses on readiness, with $4.7 billion allocated for ground combat readiness, $5.7 billion for aviation readiness, and $4.5 billion for Fleet Marine Force readiness. Let's talk about RDT&E. The combined procurement RDT funding for LPD 17 San Antonio class amphibious transport dock, which transports Marines their equipment to support amphibious operations, increase from $77.6 million in 2024 to about $1.7 billion, good grief, in 2025. These funds will support procurement of one ship, as well as developmental funds for testing and outfitting and cost to complete. So here's the three ships we'll go over. Number one is San Antonio class amphibious transport dock, which transports Marines and equipment to support amphibious operations. Now, I'm doing this more for myself than you guys, because I don't know. I read about all these amphibious ships in the Marines, and I don't understand any of them because there's so many. So this one here, the amphibious transport dock, I think is like a larger ship. Next, we'll go to the second one, the LHA amphibious America-class amphibious assault ship. I think that's more of a something that lands, supports embarkation, deployment, and landing of Marines. And this funding dropped from $1.9 billion to $234 million. That's a big drop. The service aims to fund advanced procurement for LHA 10, an FY 2027 ship, and complete the cost for LHA 8. And then finally, medium landing ship, which enables the distribution of maneuver and logistics for Marines, increased from $14.7 million to $274 million. I think this is all RDT&E. The 2025 program goal is to fund the new lead ship and continue development and modernization. So it's not a long article, but that goes over the three ships that we've been talking about for a while, and I think I understand them a little bit more after, 2 years. San Antonio-class amphibious transport dock, America-class amphibious assault ship, and then this medium landing ship, which they're still developing. Last story. This is connected about the medium landing ship. This is from Breaking Defense, Justin Katz, 2 days ago. What we know about the Marine Corps plans for the medium landing ship. A little more detail here. The inclusion of the medium landing ship in the fiscal year 2025 shipbuilding request is a major win for the Marine Corps, which has faced significant amphibious shipbuilding cuts last year. This is not a long article at all. Roughly 5 years after then Marine Corps Commandant General David Berger first proposed his light amphibious warship concept, the medium landing ship, LSM, is formally part of the Navy's FY25 budget. So I think they called it light amphibious warship. Then they changed the name for some reason to medium landing ship. I like the other name better, but that's what they're going with. So it's in the 2025 budget. The program's inclusion in the shipbuilding budget And by extension, the budget justification documents were published late Monday, providing a first glimpse of the project timeline and funding investments. The purpose of this ship is to shuttle personnel equipment through the first island chain. Front and center in the budget justification documents, which the Pentagon calls the J-books, is production cadence. I didn't know that, J-books. Justification documents, remember that. So here's, I guess, the quote-unquote timeline. One ship will be purchased in FY25 and 26, followed by two ships per year throughout the current future year's defense program ending in 29. The requested funding for FY25 is $268 million, and then the next year is $300 million for 28 and 29. The medium landing ship is designed to fill the gap between the Navy's large multipurpose amphibious warfare class ship and the small landing vessel. I guess that's why they call it the medium, duh. This ship will be deployed tailored logistics, select power projection, and support strike capabilities via embarked Marine Littoral Regiment. In terms of size, the LSM is expected to be 400 feet long, have a beam of 55 feet, displace 2,522 long tons, and have a 12-foot draft. I don't understand any of that. Marine Corps leadership has previously stated that service will need at least 35 ships. I understand that. Nine per Marine Littoral Regiment plus a handful of extras expected to be in maintenance availabilities at a given time to meet requirements, spares. Who in industry is going to build the LSM is still an open question. The Marine Corps began a formal request for soliciting proposals earlier this year and will spend much of 2024 receiving and evaluating potential offers. A contract to the chosen shipbuilders anticipated for award in March of 25, so 1 year from now. The first ship will be due for delivery 4 years later in February of 29. General Berger, retired, first introduced the light amphibious warship concept in 2019. Since then, the Marine Corps has experimented with a stern landing vessel as a precursor to the Marine landing ship to help refine requirements, including most recently Camp Pendleton, California, as part of Project Convergence. So you have a concept, then you do experimentation, and then that informs requirements. This is exactly what they're doing. And that's it. What am I doing on time? 22 minutes, another short episode. Next episode will probably be short just like this. I think we'll get to the Navy budget in the next episode. So that's pretty much it. What episode is this? 242 is in the books. Thank you very much for listening and good night.